Hello and welcome to Comadres y Comics. This is episode number 36 and we're your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Welcome back, girls. So we're very excited. Why are we excited, guys?
We are in a brand new,
very fancy
studio.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's super beautiful in here. And I know you guys can tell from the audio quality, too. So very excited here.
Well, I'm a little sad because at this studio, we don't have a little Latina waitress bringing us food and water like we did at our others. FYI, that was Sarah.
Yeah, that was me. So anyway, girl, let's go right into it. What's the Chisme de la Semana, Jen?
So Chisme de la Semana is going to be in three parts. And I'm pretty sure most people have heard about this right now. But it was announced that Ruby Rose is going to be taking up the mantle of Batwoman. And they are planning a TV show, but it's not fully set up. And I read this in an Entertainment Weekly article that they're still on the fence about whether they're going to be producing that TV show, but she is going to be premiering in a crossover event with Green Arrow, Flash, and all the others. Not DC Legends of Tomorrow, where apparently they've been cast aside or whatever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because when they originally did, I've watched one of the crossovers, and when they did the crossover, I think it was during some holiday. I don't remember if it was Thanksgiving or Christmas. Legends was involved because that's the one episode of Legends of Tomorrow I watched.
Dang. So, yeah, I used to watch it, but it wasn't. I just stopped watching it. But yeah, one of the characters was from the Arrow show, and then I think they even had Constantine on one of
them. I was going to say, Constantine has joined them since I've watched, and that is one of the reasons I kind of am interested in going back, but I just wasn't familiar with a lot of those characters, and so there was no buy-in for me, but I hear such good things about it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but so it's going to be a crossover event that's going to be happening in the winter, so this is when she's going to be premiering, but the other half of this chisme is that Ruby Rose has quit Twitter because of the backlash. Yes.
Are you serious? There's backlash.
There's always backlash.
And this one is actually in two parts. One, because she's going to be portraying a queer character. Batwoman is a lesbian, and we reviewed,
the book
a couple of episodes ago.
That was a lot of episodes ago. It was episode 11, actually.
Episode 11. And we specifically reviewed it because it had a La Llorona storyline to it that we thought was really well done.
Volume 1, Hydrology.
And so there's that, and I'm just like, well, homophobia is still well and alive in 2018. The other part is that Kate Kane, who is Batwoman, who Ruby Rose will be, is Jewish. And a lot of people wanted a Jewish actress portraying Kate Kane.
Ah, I see.
And she's been receiving a lot of criticism, and some of them not very, like, very, not even, like, critical. They're mostly just mean and kind of offensive, directed at her because she is a genteel portraying a Jewish woman. So it's an interesting bit of criticism. I just think, like, if it's like, super, super bad, like, come on, people, calm the F down. Like, you don't need to be rude about it. I think there should be some criticism due to it because Kate Kane is a Jewish woman and we don't, in comics, that is actually has been confirmed to being Jewish and it would have been nice, like, that's understating to have a Jewish actress, but like people being like sending death threats and stuff like that.
Oh,
and,
that's extra.
Yeah, that's like extra. Like, calm the fuck down. Have some civility, please.
I like her. I saw her on
Orange is the New Black.
Yeah,
I've heard a lot of
she's really hot.
Talk about about her role on that TV show. I stopped watching Orange is the New Black, I think, after season two. I just never went back to it. But when she came on, I remember it, like, blowing up all over that people were just so, like, they really loved the character that she played and just her acting and everything.
Yeah, yeah. She was really good in John Wick 2, I believe.
Was it two or three?
But yeah,
it was John Wick 2.
Yeah, she was really great in that one, too. I enjoy her. She's very beautiful. She's a good actress, and so I'm excited about this.
Yeah, I am too. So the series is in development and stuff like that. They're not sure whether it's going to kick off or not, but they are developing a Batwoman series. But that is that part of the G's.
I love me some Kate Kane.
Kate Kane is awesome. And speaking of more LGBT characters, Chandra from Magic the Gathering is going to get her own comic book series. And now Chandra is a confirmed lesbian planeswalker from Magic the Gathering. Mm. And she's getting her own comic series coming out in a couple of months. And in 2013, IDW did the Magic the Gathering series.
Yeah.
And it wasn't very good. That was a lot of criticism about it. Because it was not good. And I actually did pick up some of the books that we had at the shop a long time ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, they weren't good. So hopefully this will be better. It's going to be written by Vita Ayala, who's done, she's done stuff for Puerto Rico Strong.
Awesome. Yeah. And so you're telling me that there is a Latina creator that is going to be involved in this Magic the Gathering comic. That's amazing. Yes.
Yes.
Sarah, looks like you're going to be dragged along with Jen into this foray of magic that I have, that we are both deeply entrenched in.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And so she's also done other stuff. She's done Suicide Squad for DC. She's done some stories for Supergirl and Bitch Planet Triple Feature as well.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So she's pretty prolific. She's done quite a bit. And the artist is going to be Harvey Montesillo Tolibao, who is a Filipino comic book artist.
What?
And he's done stuff for Batman Rebirth, mostly for DC.
X-Men 2, Green Arrow, I believe.
Yeah. He's done stuff for Avengers, Danger Girl, Psylocke, Darkhawk. So he's also a pretty prolific artist. So it's going to be... I hope they do a well job. And if it's Vita who's writing it, I am pretty sure that she... that she'll do a great job. And I hope they include the fact that Chandra is queer.
Yeah.
And she's one of the few confirmed queer characters in Magic the Gathering.
Well, I just love that they went with a female planeswalker.
Yeah, and the interesting one. I mean, they could have, like, the obvious one would have been Liliana.
Yes.
Liliana's already had her own thing, and she has a lot of content.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad that they chose Chandra. She's really cool. And and it's really funny because they describe her as someone who'd rather burn the world than face her problems.
Wow.
So, you know what?
Jen is just like...
I can relate to that 100%. I like Chandra in game and in story. She's really good. So she's one of my faves.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited for this. And it's going to be... They haven't given us a release date, but...
I think they said sometime in November, right?
I believe so. They haven't really...
Well, I want to find out is... are the creators local? What can we do in the shop? This sounds like an amazing opportunity to do a crossover event with Magic and comics.
That would be... You know what? Vita has a Twitter, so I'm...
Let's get on that.
We definitely have to get on that. That would be a cool in-store event that we can do. And that I think people will turn out to, because
absolutely.
Chandra is a beloved character in the Magic community. And she's very good in mono red decks. Okay. Now on to the last piece of chisme. Fox has a Simpsons sequel planned, as well as a Bob's Burger and Family Guy movie.
I don't think I even ever saw the first Simpsons movie. Was it any good?
It was good. It was funny, and it was pretty interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't they get to say the F word or something?
Yes, that was the big thing.
Which character?
Homer.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Yeah.
I wish it was Bart.
they might let him drop the F bomb this time around. But I'm super excited for that, especially a Bob's Burger film, because I love Bob's
Me
Burgers.
Me too.
don't really have any like stuff as to when it will be coming out, but it's going to be in partner with DreamWorks.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so that's gonna be interesting.
DreamWorks, who's the big producer dude that's involved with DreamWorks? Blank. But there's a big name behind DreamWorks. Wow, too bad we don't have these like little computer things that is go into the palm of our
hand. That makes stuff happen.
But I'm excited about all of those projects.
Google, yeah. Who's in DreamWorks?
Yeah. So it's just like it's interesting because of the Fox Disney purchase. So you would have think Disney would have helped out with it. But I think they're still like they're still working with DreamWorks for a bit. Before they move on to like really working with Disney, or maybe there's some contract stuff that's going like, oh, we were gonna work with you up to this year, and then they're like, oops, looks like we sold to Disney. We're gonna have to figure something out.
Just kidding. It was Steven Spielberg. That's the name I'm trying to think of.
Oh, okay. But look towards that in the future. You know that those are gonna be coming out, and I'm. I like The Simpsons, and I like the first Simpsons movie, and like I think we'll always get Simpsons content.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited for the Bob's Burger movie.
Yes,
I want to see that. I want to see some more F-bombs dropped.
I hope that actually it leads to a lot more growth of the fan base for the TV show, because I'm always shocked that there's so many people still that don't watch Bob's Burgers.
Oh my god,
this is so amazing.
I have never watched it. I know.
Sarah, I know. How could
I know. I gotta.
We'll be taking open applications for our Kamanasi Comics co-hosts.
Now that you guys don't need me anymore.
Oh my god.
Must watch Bob's Burgers.
Okay, yeah. Will do. I'll get on that.
So, one last piece of chisme is actually something that is coming up, an event that is coming up at Heidi Ho Comics in a couple of weeks. And this is the main set off to our big promotion of our Border Town number one signing that we're going to have at Heidi Ho Comics on New Comic Day, September 5th. It's a Wednesday, so you know that
Wednesday.
If you read comics, that new comics come out every Wednesday. And we'll be having it at Heidi Ho Comics, which is at their new location, 412 Broadway in Santa Monica, from 6 to 8. And Eric Esquivel will be there signing copies of number one. And Kamalasi Comics, we will be there. We are sponsoring a arts and crafts section for all ages. We're going to have arts and crafts that all relate to Aztec mythology, because once you read the book, you'll see the tie-in.
Yeah.
And we're also going to have Latinx themed food.
Yes.
So far, we know there's going to be horchata and elote.
Yeah.
So
elotes.
It's on a first come, first serve basis. Once it's out, it's out.
Yes. So you need to put it in your schedule right now to be at Heidi Ho Comics on September 5th. It's a Wednesday from 6 to 8.
Mm-hmm. On your schedule. I don't know how they say it. I've always wanted to say it that way, but I can't. I never do that.
Schedule.
Okay, guys. So, what time is it, Kristen?
It's beer review time.
Hey.
So, today, we're recording a little early today, so I'm a little scared that Sarah has brought us a double IPA.
I tried to do something different, but guys, look at this can. It's amazing.
Oh, it's so cute.
My God.
And I just couldn't pass it up.
Okay.
I was like, the girls will love the can, and I think they'll appreciate this. So.
The fact that it has an old school arcade game right there on the front is super awesome.
Okay, this might not mean anything to you guys, but okay, Overwatch is having a summer event right now.
Uh-huh.
And one of the characters that I main, her name is Moira, just got a skin that was, I guess it was the Irish flag or whatever, but it's green, orange, and white. And when I saw that, I saw it, and I'm just like, did Sarah bring us Gatorade? Because me and my friends have taken to calling it the Gatorade skin.
That's funny. Well, this isn't Gatorade. This is a Start Double IPA from Bottle Logic Brewing. Have we done Bottle Logic before?
No, and they're in Anaheim.
Okay, so
interesting, but
it's a double IPA, and oh my gosh, it's a hazy IPA, which it's actually not as hazy as what we've seen. But look at there's floaters in it.
This it looks like little stars.
Yeah, this beer looks like
that was
I
not
gave
what
it
came. That was not what that.
This
I thought.
Beer looks like I gave it to my little nephew, and he took a drink and just left all his floaters in it.
Yeah,
that's so gross.
that's
public announcement:
saying.
Don't give your beer to your nephews. But this is a 9% ABV.
Sorry, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Sarah, I haven't eaten anything.
I ate breakfast.
So this is a double IPA from Konami Code Hazy IPA series. So Konami Code series, so that's why all the gaming stuff on the...
Yeah, exactly.
On the,
yeah, I'm familiar with
can.
Konami.
That's so cool. Okay, so it's a Northeast-style IPA can series. This double IPA makes a bold move with an outrageously over-the-top blend of Mosaic, Eldorado, and Galaxy hops for a citrus-driven, freshly juiced flavor. You'll find familiar background layers of dank, piney citrus featuring new character notes of exotic tropical fruit with peach and piney brightness. Start is full-bodied and fruity with a resinous finish. Yes, I see the resin all in my little cup. And it says, get ready for the boss level. Can I just say that before even drinking it, that this description and the can and everything, I love it. And what I also love is this like look of complete disgust on Jen's face after she took a drink.
No, I haven't. I just smelled it.
Oh, okay.
And also, it's just...
There's a cute...
Have you ever left water out in a glass?
Yes.
And how the stuff at the bottom forms?
Yeah.
That's...
Oh, my God. Why do you have to ruin it for me?
I mean, it looks gelatinous.
Okay.
Stop. You're not giving
you're
me
You're not
any...
helping it.
You're not helping
okay,
me.
Okay, I'm going to be the strong one and take a sip.
There's so the artwork on this can is just amazing. There's a BLT sandwich, and it says, try it with this. So you can pair this with the BLT.
Listen, I was scared right now, and I faced my fears, and I took a drink. But it's good.
Yeah, I enjoy it.
You're right.
I love it. I love the artwork.
It's
artwork
good.
I do like the artwork for the can now that I can actually see it and I wasn't viscerally reminded of the ugliest skin to come out. But it's...
I can taste that fruity.
Yeah, I can
tropical
taste,
fruity.
I can taste the fruitiness of that, and I like it.
It's really cool. It says drink manual, keep cold 45 degrees, pour into a glass or not. And then it has a little beaker and says made with science.
That's cute.
That's says, adorable.
Please,
okay.
I mean,
please
it's kind of unwind. Just the can alone makes
me. I mean, as I say, the aesthetic just. Before you drink it is just, I really like it.
Okay, that's pretty charming. That's pretty charming.
And as Sarah mentioned, it is local-ish to Los Angeles. It is in Anaheim, and the address of the brewery is 1072 North Armando Street, and that's in Anaheim, 92806.
Anaheim.
Yes, Anaheim. My brother goes out to Anaheim to this particular brewery, and he has nothing but good things to say about it.
Oh,
so,
cool.
So apparently it's a really nice brewery, and my brother feels really good about traveling all the way over there to have some beer. So it speaks highly about the brewery itself. I'm ready to rate it, guys.
Yeah,
what about you guys?
Uh-huh.
Let's start with Jen, because I felt like you were on the fence.
I was on the fence, mostly because when I took a whiff of it, all I got slapped in the face with was like that hoppy smell.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my God, I'm going to taste nothing but hops and I'm going to die. But I actually like it. I actually like how it tastes. Mm-hmm. Visual reminders aside, I'm going to give it a full.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. So, like I said, 9.0 double IPA is like it's hit and miss for somebody who doesn't like IPA hoppy. And this description definitely said dank. Mm-hmm. So to me, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be really, there's going to be a really bitter aftertaste. There wasn't, and I can taste the fruitiness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Sometimes when beers claim to have fruitiness, it's a lie.
Very much so.
And even if it's there, it gets covered with that real hopping IPA flavor at the end. And this doesn't have it at all for me. The one thing I would say is if you're drinking this, you know, just with friends or at a barbecue or whatever, it's 9%. Be careful. A one and done, I would say. But I'm going with a rigid. I really, really like it a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what? I'm going to second that. This is Sarah, and I'm going to give it a rigid as well. Mm-hmm. Not only is the can just lovely and just wonderful and puts me in a good mood just to see it, but the drink itself, I know you say it's a 9%, but I don't really feel it.
I know that's why it's very dangerous. Mm-hmm.
So, and I liked it. And I actually like those little floaties.
No.
They look like little stars, like a little constellation,
listen,
a little galaxy inside.
If they were neon color and they glowed in the dark, I'd be on board.
All right.
Let's make that happen.
If they were that, I would have gone full rigid. As is, the visual reminder definitely detracts from it, and that's why I went with a full.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that concludes, I guess, our beer review. It's two rigids and a full.
Yeah.
And now it's time for our beer review.
I always do that.
It's that 9%. It's our book review, guys. What are we reviewing today?
Well, today we have a book called Photographic, The Life of Graciela Iturbide. And this
book deserves an applause.
Of course. This book came across my radar because Jen actually ordered it when she saw it in previews as a book that was coming out brand new. And when it came into the shop, I was doing the inventory and I saw it. I was like, oh my gosh, this looks really interesting. So I took it and I fully intended for it to be an On My Radar book a couple of episodes back. But we had so many On My Radar that particular episode that I never got to it. And in the interim, Sarah asked to read it, so she read it and she loved it.
Oh,
and so
totally.
We just decided instead of just doing an On My Radar that we're going to do a full-on book review. So I just want to kind of read the back of it to give people a little feel, because the one thing that I really, really, not the one thing, one of the things that I really love about this book is it's so different from anything we've ever done on the show.
It definitely is.
It's a biography, and the way that it's written kind of goes back and forth between the first person and then also just the creators kind of telling us a little bit about Graciela. Mm-hmm. So the back of the book just mentions, born in Mexico City in 1942, Graciela Iturbide wants to be a writer, but her conservative family has a different idea. Although she initially follows their wishes, she soon grows restless. After tragedy strikes, she turns to photography to better understand the world. The photographic journey she embarks on takes her throughout Mexico and around the globe, introducing her to fascinating people and cultures, and eventually bringing her success and fame. With more than 24 photographs by Iturbide herself, Photographic explores the question of what it means to become an artist.
Well, I love this book and I love that introduction. It actually kind of sums it up for us. And it's cool because it's, you know, and it's sort of a little bit magical for me. This book was because I felt like it was kind of like a poem.
Yes, it was very much written in that way.
It was very poetic.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which I'm actually, what you both of you just said is very funny, because in the back of the book, there are some quotes from Graciela where she says it makes her, she gets mad when people describe her work as magical. And I know you said it was magical for you, that it wasn't magical, but she said that makes her upset, that her goal is to create poetry with her photos. So yeah. I think that's very like the fact that came across in what we read, and that the creators actually honed into that.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
They created this graphic novel around her story. I mean, they hit that goal. So definitely, the way that they presented this work and her life and everything was like right on point.
You know, and I'd like to know exactly how did they get inspired to do this, especially Isabel Quintero, who,
yeah.
chose this photographer to do a graphic novel on, it just I don't even know where her mind was at, how she was inspired, or how she even took on that endeavor, because obviously, you know, like, the person herself is going to read it. So,
yeah. So, yeah, like, that could be a little nerve-wracking, yeah, for sure. But in the back, there's a little bit about the creators. And so there's a little bit about both Isabel Quintero, who is the writer, and Zeke Peña, who is the artist? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Isabel actually was approached by somebody to ask her if she was interested in writing a manuscript about the life of renowned photographer Graciela Iturbide. And she took it as a sign, because actually in 2007, after she had gained her BA in English and an MA in English composition, she went to the Getty Museum for the first time, and one of Graciela's exhibits was there.
Oh, wow.
And she says that she was very, very affected by that. And so when she was approached to do this project, she was like, of course, mm-hmm, I'm going to do this. And it's interesting because Zeke has a similar story, in that he writes about how when he was a kid, he took a backpacking trip through northern Mexico with his dad and a 35mm camera, a few rolls of black and white film, and a small book of Graciela's photography.
Wow.
So they each both were affected by Graciela before they even took on this project. So when it came as an opportunity for them to participate and to work on this project together, there was no way that they could turn it down.
Well, wow. When you put it that way, I mean, that's quite amazing. And I really, you know how I always talk about the pairing, like the beautiful marriage between a writer and an artist in a comic book?
Yes.
This is definitely one of the best examples of a wonderful pairing between an artist and a writer. I found it kind of really compelling how it's in black and white.
Yes.
And how they take actual pictures that she took, mm-hmm, and then Seke draws them.
Yes.
And then it kind of makes it a whole new art. I don't want to say it breeds in new life. I want to say it almost transforms it in something new, even though it's a kind of a almost a mirror image of it. I don't know what I'm saying.
Totally understand. Yeah. I understand what you're saying, because it almost kind of talks to Graciela's way that she herself describes her photography, that using her bird's eyes, mm-hmm, that through photography she enters another world,
yeah,
and that in taking her photographs and then basically imagining, translating them into graphic form, it's almost, uh-huh, like another world layered on top, because, mm-hmm, now we're seeing what she saw in her photograph, but now we're seeing it through Zeke's eyes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was amazing, to see the artist in this book's rendition of actual photographs that they include here in the book. Mm-hmm. It's just so super cool to see that, and to see what his interpretation was of, mm-hmm, it as well.
Exactly.
Because they've done multiple interviews, mm-hmm, with people who knew her, who mentored her, or who know her. She's not dead. She's, yeah, she's alive, people. You can
she's alive. She's still very much active.
Yeah, she's, yeah, very,
she's still
active.
Photography. Mm-hmm. She's still doing photography right now.
Yes.
Yeah. And speaking about how you said, like, you really liked Zeke's artwork, what I really loved about his artwork and about the photographs and about herself and what she said, I have this big thing about photography, and I kind of don't like it, especially from professional photographers,
mm-hmm,
when they go to third world countries other countries where they're not from,
yeah,
and they take pictures of people,
yes,
without their permission,
mm-hmm,
and it's a really big thing. I don't know if I've said in this podcast, but when I was in Guatemala, my sister and my mom, they were wearing the classic basically Guatemalan outfit, which is a corte, a huipil, and a cinta. I forget what the name is, like what the actual name for it is. But I guess the closest approximation I could get to it is maybe like a Japanese obi.
Oh, okay.
That basically holds the outfit together. Mm-hmm. And they were speaking in Quiche, which is one of the dialects that's common in Guatemala, that's the native Mayan tongue.
Right.
And they were basically haggling with this woman about a price of a shirt that I wanted. And my mom and my sister, they're basically haggling. It's a whole process that you have to do that I didn't, when I was younger and I would go to Guatemala, I did not get.
Yeah.
I didn't get, but it's a thing that you do and that if you haggle, basically you're from there.
Right.
If you don't haggle, you're immediately outed as a tourist.
Yeah.
As wow. not
and then
from
charge twice as much.
And you, oh my God, you're twice, not twice. You get charged three times.
Jeez.
Four times the price of something. But they were doing that, and I was there on the sidelines. And this woman, a tourist, because one, she's white, and two, she had a very fancy camera with her, stopped, looked at my mom and my sister and the woman and picked up her camera and was going to take a picture without their permission.
Oh, uh-huh.
And I was like, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And I spoke to her in English, which is basically...
Took her off guard, probably.
Yeah, oh, I definitely took her off guard. I was the most modern dressed there, but I know I definitely caught her off guard.
Yeah.
But she was going to take a picture without their permission.
Right.
And that always angers me, especially when I see it in Guatemala and when I'm there, are American or European tourists coming and taking a picture without asking permission and stuff like that. And there's a getting recognition for work, and they win hundreds of dollars and stuff like that, or win awards, and the people who they took a picture of get nothing.
Right.
They don't, they got their privacy invaded, a moment of their life stripped away from them, and all for the benefit.
Their souls were captured?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I mean, in a manner of speaking, that's what photography is. It's capturing, in the book it says capturing the past and the present at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But how she describes it and how she does her work, she said, she doesn't take a picture and she doesn't publish it without the permission of the person.
Mm-hmm.
When she was in artist's hometown.
Yeah,
was it
where they had the lady with the iguanas on her head?
Yes, where the women...
kind of reversed. The women were the breadwinners. And,
oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I want to go to that town, by the way.
Uh-huh.
That actually part of the story
Juchitán
was really interesting
was
to me.
Really interesting. But in Juchitán, when she says that, when she was there and she's like, they have to look at me. There has to be an acknowledgement of the picture being taken. I thought that one, that's incredibly, incredibly respectful. And that is how it should be done. You should be able, the person should be able to look at you in the eye and look at the camera in the eye. It shouldn't be a moment stolen. It should be a moment shared.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how she described it.
Yeah.
And that immediately made me respect her as a photographer. And like, yeah, she's Mexican and she's taking photos of the native people, the indigenous people there. But like, and like that, like maybe gives her like more credit, like it does give her more credentials and stuff like that as someone who can be taking, because she's taking pictures of her home. Mm-hmm. But even then, that's kind of like an invasion of privacy as well, as because she's not indigenous. She's not.
Yeah.
She's not indigenous.
I do recall like she, matter-of-factly ran across the lady with the iguanas on her head, and then she did ask her. Can
that's
I take
what I'm saying
here?
Is that she takes it, that she asked if she could take it, and the woman said yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that's one thing. Mm-hmm. Even when she's taking pictures of the funeral, we see the picture of them taking they were burying a body or something, and it specifically says this is the last time I take a picture of death without permission. Because and that's what she's saying is that that it's so important for her to basically, I think it comes down to basic respect of people, that she isn't the type of photographer to just take advantage, I guess.
And so basically that the fact this book was able to portray the fact that she respected her images and what she was taking a picture of. And I thought that was incredible, and I really, really loved that.
I found it super interesting that her very first major commission was from the Instituto Nacional Indigenista, so the National Institute of Indigenous Peoples. Mm-hmm. And that is super cool to me. It was formed in 1948 by the Mexican government to design culturally sensitive policy regarding the indigenous people of Mexico. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they actually commissioned her leads me to believe that they knew her work and that they had talked to her, and they knew that she was the right person because she was going to deal with that project respectfully.
Mm-hmm. And that, I think that is really, really awesome.
Well, her story is super interesting too, because I mean, she married young and mm-hmm. she started 19. To have children.
Yep.
And then she went back to school.
Yep.
Back to college. And then she eventually, I think she got divorced, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, you have kids, or, oh, you know, you got married, your life is over. Well, mm-hmm. for women, not men.
Yeah, for women.
But but for her, in her case, it actually, I think, propelled her to want to further her education.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because in the story, we follow her story from being a young girl stealing photographs from her dad's study
and not liking her own picture being taken.
Yeah, to her growing up, going away to Catholic boarding school, and you know, and then actually becoming a photographer and having multiple mentors and a lot of people who just were huge influences in her artistic life. So we kind of go on that journey with her through this book, and I really found it interesting that the opportunities that were afforded to her because of the fact that she's from Mexico and she's from a pretty well-off family.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of these opportunities came from the fact that she was able to get an education,
which
is not the norm.
No, especially
for women in Mexico.
In Mexico, yeah.
Plus, I don't remember, but did they say that her husband was, in fact, not helping her, but like encouraging her to further her education, or was it an obstacle?
No, they didn't say anything.
I don't think they mentioned.
All. They basically, what they mentioned was that her daughter, the tragedy that they speak of, which was basically her daughter passing away, is what incentivized her to continue with it. It wasn't that she was stopped or anything.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't really mention the husband at all. We don't even really know that they basically separated it until towards the end of the book.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think that she talks about how her dad, because she was stealing pictures and things like that, gave her a Brownie camera when she was a kid. And she specifically says, and if you think that this was like the grand big thing in my story that created me as a photographer and like was the impetus for me to become this very well-renowned photographer, you'd be wrong. Like it was not a big deal to me. And it was the fact that when her daughter died, she was lost. She just didn't know. I think most importantly, what they conveyed in the book, she didn't know who she was.
Mm-hmm.
And that
mm-hmm.
the fact that she was able to see, quote unquote, through mm-hmm. bird's eyes. And there's the theme of birds mm-hmm. in the whole entire story. Mm-hmm. And I really love mm-hmm. That part of it. But that her camera was her window into another world. And she wanted to find herself there mm-hmm. Is what I got the story. And so to me, like Jen says, that was her incentive to continue to take pictures and to kind of find her place in the world through her photography.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a really excellent book. I mean, it's a beautiful hardcover. It's a black and white art along with some photography from the photographer Graciela. So and then the story written itself, it's sort of like it to me. It felt like I said, it's magical, but also like a poem and sort of like a dream, mm-hmm. like recalling a dream that you just woke up and you're like, remembering your dream.
Mm-hmm. And she said that one of her inspirations was Brassai.
Yes.
Who said specifically said that reality, that artwork shouldn't be based in reality and like and basically like trying to capture what's real and mm-hmm. stuff like that. It mm-hmm. should be based off of dreams, mm-hmm. and because dreams reveal human nature and stuff like that. And the whole like recurring dream that she had of the man with the birds and all yeah. that stuff. I think that's very well captured here. And mm-hmm. And then to some point, I do agree with that. I do agree with that, with the whole, because you can see how she was influenced by her maestro, mm-hmm. And by like the Frida Kahlo.
Oh, yeah, that's another thing.
That's surrealism and yes. everything. But how she kind of made it her own personal work. She kind of diverged from that as well. Because there's a lot of, so I can see why she doesn't like it when her stuff is described as magical. Or I think she said surreal as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah.
She said that she's trying to create poetry. She's trying to create, like, that reality itself, that dreams and imaginations reveal human nature, but that reality can be just as strange.
Right, yeah.
As whatever the imagination can occur, especially when you can see it with the picture of the woman,
yes,
La Medusa,
yeah,
uh-huh. The woman with her crown of lizards,
right, yeah,
or even in the picture she took of the festivals of the pre-Columbian or like pre-Catholic rituals that are done in the of the people who wear the masks,
yes,
in festivals and who have icons and stuff like that. And the picture that she took that I think that I really liked was of the girl dressed with a headdress and the cross and everything, but she's standing in this like dilapidated circle.
Yes,
It was very ominous and very creepy, but very beautiful yeah. at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's real. That's something that happens every year at a festival. These the rituals of the hints of the past,
right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but one of the things that I keep hearing from you is like very real. Mm-hmm. And one of her works, she was given permission to, because Diego Rivera closed off
yes.
Frida Kahlo's bathroom,
mm-hmm.
and for her to be the first one to go in there after several years after her death, and to see, like, you know, our restroom, we go in there, we brush our teeth, we do everything,
yeah.
we take
mm-hmm.
our shower, we get ready, you know,
all
we the face the world,
yeah,
we face the world after emerging from a restroom, which sounds kind of like weird, but
it's
for her
true.
But for her to go into the restroom that had been closed off by Diego
and left as it was
after
her death,
and that's mm-hmm. another thing she says, she did not place or fixed things to have them in the frame of the picture. She just took it as it was,
mm-hmm. Except for her ashes.
Yeah, except for the ashes.
Right. She got in trouble
for moving her
Frida's ashes.
And but, I mean, like, because she said that she felt that they belonged in there.
Yeah.
And
part of that story that was very compelling to me, and that was like, when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, it like really hit me, was that she said, like you were saying, you know, you go in there, it's the nitty gritty that you do. It's what you generally don't show the world. You mm-hmm. go in there to take a shower and wash off all the grime and to fix your hair and put on your makeup, and you come out how you want to present yourself. Mm-hmm. And so the pictures that they did share, or the depictions of the photos that she had taken, were of things like, I didn't even know she had a fake leg.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't
yeah.
know that.
Oh, yeah.
But pictures of like that just like haphazardly strewn in a bathtub, mm-hmm. or her meds, her medications
yeah.
that she took. It was very, very just like powerful,
mm-hmm. yeah.
to
very evocative.
Yes, to mm-hmm. see those things, and to the way that she described them of things that Frida tried so hard to hide from the mm-hmm. world.
Yeah, like the whole, I didn't know she wore a corset.
Yeah,
to help her with through the pain.
Yeah,
right.
Of like,
she lived with pain.
Mm-hmm. She lived with pain.
And, at times it was excruciating.
Right,
and, mm-hmm. but it was constant with mm-hmm. with her because of her accident, and she also had polio at a very young age.
Okay.
So mm-hmm. There was a lot going on with her, and you could see it through her paintings. But and this is kind of amazing because this book is artists telling a story about an artist who then told a story about another artist.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fucking beautiful.
and and it's a very, very beautiful book.
Yes.
And I really like, it gave me a picture into somebody who I didn't really know about.
Right.
Graciela Iturbide.
And yeah. she has won so many awards. I mean, yeah. in the back, it lists all the things that the awards that she has gotten. And it just is so super disappointing to me, the fact that this amazing Latina Mexican woman who has done so much in her field of art, of photography, has accomplished so much, and that I had never heard of her before in my life.
Yeah. I was really disappointed in myself for not knowing who she was
yeah.
until this book came into our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing is I liked how she was commissioned to take photographs of Chicano life here in Los
yeah.
Angeles.
Uh-huh. East LA.
Yes. Yeah.
And I thought that was awesome.
And she focused on actually the true nitty-gritty life of Latinos and Chicanos in East LA, and mm-hmm. The photos that they shared of that, and the story about how the people that she was kind of embedded with and taking pictures of wanted to take her to see the mariachis,
right?
And it wasn't actually a picture of mariachis; it was a picture of revolutionaries,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Like Mexican revolution,
Zapata,
yeah,
and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I actually chuckled when I
so did
that
I.
Part. I was like, yeah. oh my God.
But I felt like that really, that picture in itself and how she described it really encapsulated the East LA vibe. And she says it too, that she likes to capture the in-between.
Mm-hmm.
And I really resonated with that.
Yeah.
I really liked that. The fact that they're descended from Mexicans,
yeah,
but they're not really from Mexico,
right.
but mm-hmm. they're not really Americans because they're from Mexico,
right? Right.
And
yeah.
I loved how she depicted that.
Yeah, and she even mentions about how some of them were deaf, and that to even be more ignored mm-hmm. because of your disability.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think it's time to actually rate the book. And before we do, I do want to let people know that her photography is actually held in museum collections all over the place. And if you are local to Los Angeles, it can be found in the J. Paul Getty Museum right here in L.A., which is an interesting thing to know is that this is actually this graphic novel is a Getty publication.
I know.
Yes.
I know. That was just astounding. Mm-hmm. When I read that, I'm like... I think of that guy who didn't pay the ransom for his grandkid. Okay, you guys aren't aware of that. There's a movie about, you know, Getty, who they kidnapped his... Anyway, but for another time, guys.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Well, it's also, if you're not in L.A., you can see her stuff at San Francisco Museum of Modern Art. And then back down south, the California Museum of Photography that is in Riverside, that is not too far out from Los Angeles. And then in Houston, there's the Museum of Fine Art. And in New York, there is the Museum of Modern Art. And in Philadelphia, the Museum of Art. She has ongoing standing installations in all of these places.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay, guys, I guess we're ready to rate this book.
Okay, well, this is Kristen, and I read this book twice, and there's still so many things that I actually want to say that we just haven't had time for, because it's just amazing, and there's that many great points in here, but also, we want to save some for you to read it yourself. Mm-hmm. It is available at your local comic book shop. It's orderable, and you can do that at any of the places that are near you. And I give it 3 conchas and a cup of champurrado.
I'm going to second that. This is
I'm
Sarah.
I'm going to third that as well.
Dang. you got the cup of champurrado. This book is amazing. I mean, I really highly recommend you pick it up. And I think it makes a wonderful gift. Like if somebody's birthday
yes,
coming up.
Yes.
It's a very...
I mean, it's a hardcover. It's so gift worthy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I got a chance to meet both Isabel and Seque at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And you can see that little snippet video on our Instagram.
Cool. So I have on my radar that actually calls back to something that we talked about a while back. Remember back in the day when Infinity War was coming out, and I was like, you know, there is Well, actually, I think I'd already seen the movie. I was like, I'm so disappointed there's no death.
Yeah.
All I wanted was death. And there was no death. And I was like, why did they change it? This is so horrible.
Well, I mean, technically speaking, there was a lot of death.
Yeah. The character death. And I remember saying, okay, I think I can understand how making Thanos' motivation to, kill half of all living beings because of the fact that he's trying to vie for death's love. I could see how that would be hokey and how the MCU people didn't want to go with that because it was, Thanos in love, that's silly. Mm-hmm. But nobody ever called me out on the fact that I was completely uninformed of the fact that the movie was almost straight out of Silver Surfer Rebirth of Thanos. So
let's hold that applause for a moment because we've had this discussion before.
So
I still think that her original criticism was correct because no one called her out.
Yeah, nobody did.
No one knew. And because I looked into this, they had never reprinted that storyline before.
Yes. So this is actually, this book has just recently been reprinted from the single issues that originally came out in the late 80s, which was right before the 91 release of Infinity Gauntlet. This is a direct prequel to Infinity Gauntlet, which in Infinity Gauntlet, we all know he already has the stone. He has the gauntlet. Mm-hmm. In Silver Surfer Rebirth of Thanos, it's his quest to go and collect all of the stones. It's what we see in the movie. Mm-hmm. And lo and freaking behold, death, in the beginning of this book, Thanos is dead. He has a fight with Avengers, spoiler alert, they kill him, he's dead.
Oh my God, he fucking died.
But in this book, death actually rises him from the dead specifically for the reason that she is upset with the fact that there are more people alive right now than there have ever died.
What?
And for her, that offsets the balance of all of the universe. And because she's death, she needs people to die. And so it is her idea for half of everyone to die.
Oh, wow.
And she raises Thanos from the dead specifically for that charge.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so it's her idea, and she's the one who tells him to do it. And because he loves her and there's a little bit of some also power hungry stuff that goes on too. I mean, it's Thanos, okay? Yeah. But oh my gosh. So now I'm even more upset of the fact that there was no death in this movie because it was her freaking idea all along.
Wow.
Yeah.
You get the cat today.
But, I mean, it's classic Jim Starlin. Silver Surfer, Thanos, death, amazing story. Mm-hmm. I recommend it 100%. And I told Jen, dare I say, I like it better than Infinity Gauntlet.
What?
Yes.
Yeah, she told me that. I was just all like, ooh, I guess I might actually have to read it then.
And you're like, zah?
But either way, I still think her original criticism was fair. And the fact that no one called us out, nobody in the store, none of the older people who went to go see it, none of the older regulars who went to see it and were just all like, we're in agreement with her too. Like,
yeah.
This just tells me that no one was fucking reading Silver Surfer back
then. Oh my God. Okay.
No one knew what was happening. No one knew what was going on. So the original criticism of death still not being in Infinity War is valid.
It's valid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Got it. Well, this is Sarah, and I have an On My Radar. And just kind of piggybacking on our book review, Isabel Quintero, I'm reading her book, Gabby, A Girl in Pieces, and it's really sensational. It's written in a sort of like a diary type of format.
It sounds really cool.
And I've had so many feelings about a lot of the things that she's discussing in her book, which is written, again, in a kind of a diary kind of format. So she basically is overweight, Latina, and she actually is kind of too pale skin, and so has to constantly like be not reminding people, but kind
validate
of
her
validating
Latino-ness.
Her Latino-ness. And her best friend is coming out, had just come out, and he's also Latino, so there's a lot of stuff going on there. Her other best friend, a female, just got pregnant. So there's a lot, and her dad is a meth addict. So there's a lot of that going on, that drama going on in her life. And of course, her, you know, her quest, I guess, through this unforgiving world of chubby girls. But it's such a great book. So that's what's on my radar.
That sounds great.
It is a really amazing book. So if you guys get a chance, or if you guys want to read something, and you know,
and just to clarify, is this a graphic novel as well?
No, this one is just a it's just a book, guys.
It's just one of those.
It's one of those
sucky books with no pictures.
No pictures. It's what quote unquote some people call real books.
No, oh my God. Take that back. Wash your mouth out.
Wash
right
your
now.
I know, right? But yeah, it's a really great. It was a really really great find for me, and I really really enjoy it. So hopefully, if you guys are in kind of in between books, you might want to pick this one out. It's Gabby, A Girl in Pieces, by Isabel Quintero. So check that out, guys.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And now it's time for Juntos y Fuertes. Kristen.
That sounded very like today in Masterpiece Theater.
I was going to say like today in Days of Our Lives.
Like hours through the glass. Well, my Juntos y Fuertes today is actually something that relates thematically to the book that we read. And I had something else on line to do, but I think I'm going to do that as well. But I really wanted to talk about this first. There is a gallery in Los Angeles called Las Fotos Project Gallery.
Ooh.
And they really focus on all Latinx creators that I've seen that have photo presentations and installations there. And right now they are actually doing an installation called Thank You Islos. And the thing that really impressed me about this is that it is a solo show by a teenage girl, Metzli Garcia. And she's a local youth photographer. She has grown up and lives in East Los Angeles. And it says that she poetically captures the culture, values, and spirit of her community through her lens. As Garcia grows and moves on to pursue her undergraduate education at UCLA, we get to see what she takes with her when she talks about East Los Angeles. So I thought that was really cool. I mean, she could be a Graciela in the making. And I mean, she has her own show at just the young age of 18.
Wow.
And if you
Straight
do happen.
From Islos.
Yeah. And if you do happen to miss this particular show, Las Fotos Project Gallery is always having really interesting, cool shows and opening nights. And they're located at 2658 Pasadena Avenue in Los Angeles in the 90031, and that's Lincoln Heights.
Oh, mm-hmm. Very interesting.
Yep.
How come we didn't know about this before? See, there's so much stuff going on in LA that we really need to support.
Yes.
And find out about.
Support the arts for sure.
Absolutely.
Oh, especially for a place like LA, mm-hmm. We're all about the arts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's Latinos out there doing it all over the place, so. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, my mind just went into sex.
So before Sarah gets inappropriate, I will go forward with my next Juntos y Fuertes, which is the Queer Comics Database. Queer Comics Database, which you can find at queercomicsdatabase.com, is, was it a .com? Yeah, .com.
Yeah,
It is a database whose mission is to facilitate access to comics that contain queer representation. This includes comics published in print and on the web, comics from major publishers, independent publishers, and self-published comics, comics for children, teens, adults, as well as all-age comics, and then also representation from across the LGBTQIA spectrum, as well as intersectional representation. So, they are a database that you can go to, and if you're looking for recommendations or you want to just read diverse comics, this is a great place to go to look up any comics that deal with either queer creators or queer content. So definitely check it out.
Yeah, I was looking through the website, and one of the titles that stood out was My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness.
Yeah, we have that book in the shop.
That is a great title.
I ordered it. It was on my radar a long time ago. Yeah, because I was just all like, And there's a sequel to it called My Solo Exchange Diary.
Yeah.
Those titles are awesome.
Yeah.
Well, the database was created by Aiden Kwan and Le Button as a capstone project for the University of Washington's iSchool program with support from Geeks Out. Aiden is a Seattle-based queer non-binary comic book retailer, and their favorite comics, queer comics, include Fun Home, My Lesbian Experience with Loneliness, Nimona, and The Wicked and Divine.
Cool. Thanks so much for bringing that. Juntos y fuertes. Now, guys, it's time for saludos. We have some tweets and some messages and some questions that some listeners shared with us. So I really like this one from Five Meets Comics. This is Ripping Into Frank Miller Equals Freaking Priceless, episode 35.
I'm glad to deliver. I will rip Frank Miller for free anytime, any day. You just,
So
glad
when,
to be of service.
When I first saw that, I'm like, Frank Miller, wait, is that is right? That is right? That who it was? And then I Googled Frank Miller reconstruction, and that was the first picture that came up. Like, yep, that's who it was.
Yep, that's right.
That hideous picture came up. I'm like, yep.
Pretty much. Javier Hernandez, he says, please let the public know that the Latino Comics Expo is heading to Modesto, California in March of 2019. So now you guys know that it's heading to Modesto, California in 2019.
And you all know Latin Comics Expo in Long Beach that happens there yearly is an amazing event. Comadre Comics was there last year. We had such a great experience meeting all kinds of people. All the creators there were Latinos or had Latino content, and it was just so great. And the fact that he's taking it, like, I'm big on access. I'm 100% for supporting getting comics into the hands of the people who might not necessarily have access to them otherwise. And the fact that he's going to take this show, this convention, to Modesto, which is in the middle of BFE, California, where it is highly populated by a lot of migrant farm workers.
Okay.
And so I'm really hoping that there's going to be a lot of outreach. And actually, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe I can talk to Javier about how we can actually make that a thing, because the fact that it's going to be there and it's being sponsored by the local university.
Oh, wow.
So I'd really, really love to see some outreach to that population for sure.
Nice. Mm-hmm. He'd also like to remind us that you can pre-order your copy of Days of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos Special Edition at Los Comics. It's comex.storeny.com.
We will put that link somewhere where it is intelligible and you can just click. But remember, we did review Days of the Dead a couple of episodes back as well, and we loved it.
It was episode 27, if you'd like to hear that. Also, Eric Esquivel wanted to remind us that Border Town drops on September 5th. So that's exciting. I'm excited for that.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I
put it on my pull list like months ago.
I know. I remember when you did. You're like, I want this on my pull list. I'm like, there's not even a solicitation for it yet, Sarah.
Didn't even have a date, Sarah.
Yeah, but now we have a date, and you're going to be there. You can get your very own copy signed.
I'm so excited. honestly, guys, I'm super excited about this. I got to read the DC Vertigo panel comic, kind of a snippet of what's to come, and I'm so excited.
Yeah,
preview. That's what I was looking for. But yes, I'm very excited about that. Also, Michael Centeno. Centeno 8, he says, going to be starting a graphic book club at Tia Chuchas. And he asks, any titles you suggest with people of color characters, culturally relevant or social justice oriented themes? So he's asking us for suggestions, guys.
First of all, the fact that you're doing a graphic novel club at Tia Chuchas, I'm so excited and I'm there for it. And if you want us to come and be guests or hosts or any kind of anything, and if you want to talk to me on the side note of maybe getting books for your club, let me know. You can get me the information after.
Oh, yes.
So thank you for that. and Tia Chuchas has been one of my Juntos y Fuertes in past episodes. We participated in their event in Pacoima a couple of months ago, which was really great and amazing, and we love it. So I'm so happy to hear this. Mm-hmm. One of my recommendations that I would make for this group would definitely be Bitch Planet. Bitch Planet is all about social justice, and it's a futuristic. How would you describe it?
Futuristic. Dystopia. Jail?
Yeah, dystopia. Futuristic jail.
In another planet.
So the thing is that it really tackles a lot of stereotypes and tropes within society. And I would highly recommend that if you can get your hands on any single issues, the back matter of Bitch Planet is so socially relevant. Mm-hmm. And it deals with marginalized groups, including people of color, as well as LGBTQ, disabled, like it really just runs the gamut of the different topics that they talk about, and I think it would be a great talking point, a jump off for the group that you have.
Mm-hmm. And that actually reminds me of when I actually met Isabel Quintero. She was wearing a T-shirt, a non-compliant T-shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
I made a reference to that. And I'm like, I can't believe you're non-compliant. She's like, of course. So that's kind of one of the themes in Bitch Planet. So she reads Bitch Planet.
Yeah,
so,
cool.
I mean, that just speaks to how amazing that book is. Yeah. Any recommendations from you, Jen?
Yeah, I would recommend, of course, the first book that we ever reviewed, Maggie the Mechanic.
Yes.
Because, like, if Bitch Planet is future dystopia, Maggie the Mechanic is the possibility of Latinos in the future.
Yeah.
In a positive light.
Right, yeah.
That is really cool and super awesome.
Yeah.
I would also recommend Ghost Rider by Felipe Smith and Tred Moore, the one that focuses on Robbie Reyes.
Mm-hmm. We also reviewed that one.
We also did review that one. That one I would highly recommend just for the story and for the cultura as well.
Yes.
Because
it takes place in LA.
And it takes place in Los Angeles.
Takes place in East Los.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Felipe does an amazing job with it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we reviewed that one in episode 6. So mm-hmm. if you guys want to hear that review. This is Sarah, and my suggestion is I really love Puerto Rico Strong. That was just such an amazing book. It's huge. It has a lot of history. It taught me a lot of things. The art is sensational. There's works from a lot of people. So and also all the proceeds go to the hurricane relief. So that's like so amazing. And also I would recommend Peau Noir. Because that also was, I learned a lot of different things from some of the stories within those comics. But that one is only 2 issues, right?
Yeah, so far. Right
yeah. Yeah, but, only 2 issues out so far, but 2 amazing issues.
Yes, you can read them over and over. And to your point, Sarah, with Puerto Rico Strong, I do think that it's so important there could very well be Puerto Rican students that they are working with at Tia Chucha, but the fact that we're on the West Coast makes it that maybe the possibility of that isn't as high as if they were on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. But I think it's so important for Latinos to learn about other Latinos.
Mm-hmm.
And reading that book, I was so educated.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
I love that book. Also, Sonambulo, I really enjoyed. If you want something fun, definitely Sonambulo by Rafael Navarro.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on episode 30 that we reviewed that one. So those are, I mean, I could go on about recommendations, but those are kind of like my main ones right now. So hopefully that helps.
Great.
Great. I guess that brings us to the end of our episode, guys.
Yes.
Any shout outs where they can find us? What's going on?
Well, as always, you can find us on Instagram at Comadres y Comics.
Or on Twitter at Comic Comadres.
Or you can email us at comadresycomics.com. comadresycomics@gmail.com. And you can find us on Facebook. And we also have a Snapchat. So thanks, guys. Thanks for listening. We have been your hosts. I'm Sarah.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Jen.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.